Expand your knowledge on alternatives to animal experimentation with the latest scientific information provided during the 11th World Congress on Alternatives and Animal Use in Life Sciences.
Hello, today we are with Professor Thomas Hartung, Professor of Pharmacology and Toxicology at Constance University, Chair of Evidence-Based Toxicology at Johns Hopkins, and also Director of the Center for Alternative to Animal Testing since 2009, the CAT. The CAT is one of the organizers of the World Congress to Alternative and Animal Use in Life Science, which will take place online from the 22nd of August. Thank you, Thomas, to be with here with us today from Baltimore, right?
Yeah, hello across the Atlantic, yeah.
Thank you for being with us. The World Congress is an initiative that is pretty long. Can you tell us more about the history of this Congress and who is behind this initiative?
Yeah, it was actually my predecessor, Alan Goldberg, who started the series in 1993 here in Baltimore. So this was the starting point. And the center has been really instrumental in getting this series organized. I had the pleasure of organizing the 2009 one in Rome. My, at the time, team member John Zullo was responsible among three in Seattle some 5 years ago. So it was, and I'm still the treasurer, so I'm taking care of the money for the Alternative Congress Trust behind this. Yeah, so it's a very close involvement, I would say. And this is a love affair. Yeah, I mean, this is a this series of conferences is very special to me. It is a series of conferences which has formed a family around alternative methods, and it is a family reunion every time we come together. So it's it has a special feel to it.
Last edition took place in Seattle, and this one will be online due to the travel restriction in place nowadays. What will be the main topics of this edition compared to the last Congress?
I think a lot has happened, which started to emerge around the time in Seattle, which is mainly the technical advances which we have seen. It is really enormous how the face of what we do to replace animal testing is changing. So we're moving away from these simple cell cultures to more and more sophisticated systems. We call them sometimes now microphysiological systems, or we are using artificial intelligence, something which was not at all discussed in Seattle and which will be certainly a big point in the discussions now in Maastricht virtual.
Can you elaborate further on this change? What are the main drives and what are the main implications of this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Change?
I mean, the one side is it has always been a dream to replace animal testing with a human system. But the problem always was, how do you get human cells? I'm working on the brain. I will not get a donation from anybody for my work, at least not as long as they live. You can get skin, you can get blood, and this is also areas where a lot of progress was before, but the rest had to work essentially with tumor cell lines. And these tumor cell lines have nothing to do with physiology. I mean, we can come back to this. We have done some work. It is blowing you away. These are Franken cells. This has nothing to do with a human cell. And we do have an alternative from very recent, which is stem cells. This started in 1999, but these were the embryonic stem cells, which hardly anybody could use, especially not for regulatory purposes, because not everybody agreed that this is ethical. But this was only in 2006, yeah? And scientific timelines, this is nothing, yeah? In 2006, that induced pluripotent stem cells were invented. And this started the development that we now are starting to harvest. We now see that we have the possibility to produce organs, not only cell cultures, from essentially every organ we are interested in. So these are typically three-dimensional cultures. These are things where we rebuild the architecture and the functionality of a tissue. And this has been opening up for incredible research. And this is the how an alternative method of the 2020s is looking like.
It sounds even more than an alternative when you present it that way. Where are we nowadays when it comes to the 3 R's principles? This is one of the topic, I think, of this Congress, the 3 R in transition. But they are 60 years old, right? Where do we stand now?
Yeah, they are 60 year old. Russell and Birch in 1959 that described this principle of the 3 R's, and this was completely visionary. There was nothing around, but now we have the systems. Yeah? And as you rightly say, it is not only alternative methods, it is an enabling technology. So these organoids, these organ and chip systems and others, but also normal cell cultures, I have to say, yeah, they are suddenly proving how valuable they are in the entire biomedical research landscape. Take the recent run for COVID-19 medications. What did we see? They had prime time. Suddenly, the lung on chip models, the simple lung cultures were delivering on this, where we could not study in any animal model reasonably this infection, which is so human specific. It's really about a technology which enriches all areas of science, but in the area of regulatory use, where we typically call them alternative methods and where we are carrying out validation studies, we show how good they are.
That's where toxicology and precision medicine seems to be merging, right?
Yeah, very much so. You have to see, toxicology is using only 10% of the animals. But I would say it is fair to say 90% of the work on alternative methods is done in toxicology and related regulatory activities. So why is this? It is because here we don't want to make a mistake. We are taking decisions about the safety of patients and consumers. Every decision means hundreds of millions of possible costs. Allow something to go to the market can affect tremendous parts of the population. So here is where we show that these methods are delivering. But they're delivering just the same in basic science. They're delivering just the same in drug development. This is why the interest is much broader than just the few who are working on the regulatory science.
When it comes to artificial intelligence, this is another breakthrough technology that you mentioned at the beginning.
I mean, artificial intelligence, the idea was around since the 50s. It was actually coined the name, the term artificial intelligence in a workshop in 1955. But there was a lot of hype in several phases, but it never really made it to practical applications. And it is only since 2012 that we really have the technologies which are now called deep learning, which allow us to really effectively produce these high power predictions. And they allow now the self-driving cars or just the spectacular performance of our browsers on the entire internet with all of its information. And so AI really came only after 2012. And the scientific literature, especially to use it as an alternative method, is very, very recent. There have been the first mentionings in 1985, which I found, but it is only in the last 5 years that this has been really exploding. And this is toxicology just going with the mainstream. Yeah, it is every science is using AI now, and we suddenly see how they can even outperform the animal test. It's not just be as good, they sometimes are better than the animal tests.
And what are the main challenge for those technology to be adopted?
There's a lot of challenges. I'm very much interested in this. I actually assumed the role of the field chief editor of Frontiers in Artificial Intelligence, which is not only medicine, public health, my core area, but we have 13 areas in our journal. The first one is very simple. AI works, it makes sense only if you have big data. And big data is not something you have on an Excel sheet or so, which is a few thousand lines. we are talking about tons of data, and data which are really not just one type. It's not about having measured exactly the same things in 1,000 conditions. It's about putting together various information sources. And this has been actually achieved only in recent years. We suddenly see the formation of these enormous databases, which bring the legacy data of the past. We see that the internet is exploding with information, that scientific publications are exploding. 2.5 million articles are published in or registered in PubMed, the most important database, every year. And 80% of them describe substance effects. But then you have sensor technologies, you have robotized testing, you have the omics technologies. Sometimes we are producing terabyte of data in a single series of experiments. I just saw a statistic which says that 94% of all of the information we have generated in the history of lifetime was done in the last 5 years. Because everything is exploding, especially also the graphical information, the pictures, and high content image analysis is contributing enormously to this. This means we sit on a treasure trove of data, and AI in its various installments or the various realizations is actually making sense of this. So I would say AI is making big sense of big data. And this is what is now also being carried into our work in alternative methods. It's also giving us the opportunity to really integrate different types of information, the big challenge in toxicology.
Will all this change taking place? When do you think we'll be able to replace animals?
It depends on what for. It's all purpose driven. If you look, for example, you want to study the behavior or effect on behavior, this is very difficult to do with either of these systems. In other instances, we are sometimes blocked because we don't dare. I think in some areas the alternative methods are as good or better already, but it takes us so long to prove it. In part because the animal test data are so messy, they are so low quality, they're so badly documented, they're not so little accessible because they're siloed behind firewalls of companies and regulators. If we had more open access to all of this information, and if we would concentrate on showing objectively what these animal data give us and what these alternatives do, if we use more an evidence-based approach, I'm convinced we could really move very fast away from this in most of the areas.
Coming back to the World Congress, what can the audience expect from the program and from the speakers?
I've just seen the new revised online program yesterday, and it's fantastic. I mean, it is the second best to really meeting in person and having a beer in the evening together. So I have to compliment the organizers that they did the best possible to make this happen. They have reduced it to 2 weeks of half-day meetings instead of 1 week of full meetings. They also have taken care that all of the presentations are available afterwards to see the recordings. So nobody can say, I couldn't make it. But since the attention span is very limited online, I think half-day meetings are just ideal. They have chosen times where the main customers, which is traditionally Europe and the US, where they have work time. So it's the European afternoons and the American mornings. But it's also quite reasonable still for some of the Asian hotspots to dial in. But as I said, the recordings are available anyway. It's a very diverse program, has been refined this year again with a lot of additional abstracts being submitted, which are currently evaluated, incorporated into the program. Keynote speakers every day, two dedicated poster sessions. but also the attempt to use some other platforms. This podcast is an example, but you know, my biggest fear is we see now always hundreds of people at these web-based things, but are we only doing a television where everybody is doing their emails while listening into somebody talking? I think it's really important that they have some interactive forms. They even plan for moderated TV show type of interviews. I'm really excited to see how this will be working, but also the entire platform. Really be curious to see how it is. It was a gaming company who developed the platform. It's really, you have an avatar walking into a conference hall and discussing and seeing the booths. And I tell you, I have not seen something like this before, and I'm really looking forward to this real conference online.
The program of the Congress will be available on the 1st of June, and registration already open on the website of the Congress at www.wc11maastricht.org.
Yeah, this was always a special thing of this conference. We always took care that, first of all, it's relatively affordable for students. Traditionally, also, when we meet in person, everything is included. So we try not to have a separate gala dinner, which the students cannot afford and only the old farts are sitting at. We try to have possible lunches included. So that it's really, once you're there, you are taken care of. In this case, this is obviously not possible, but the prices for students are really very reasonable. It's just €95. For a student with the early bird deadline, for 2 weeks of entertainment and access to these things for quite a while, this is not much more than 1-2 coffees at Starbucks per day. So it's even if your institution is not paying for it, it is, I think, twice as much after the early bird deadline for the students, but it's also very affordable for others. I mean, online, you have to be competitive. People are not willing to pay the regular prices, which is a bit of a challenge because the production of such a program is also not so much cheaper than producing one in person.
I think it is now closed to participate as a speaker, but for the next edition of the Congress, because there will be a 12th one, what is the process if we want to participate as an industry, academics or students?
I mean, at the moment, there's even the big opportunity of organizing the next one. We have just released a call for proposals. I think it ends on the 30th of June. Where we ask who wants to organize the next one. And our suggestion is to have it in 2 years' time, which is ambitious, but we said this community has to meet again. We need to meet again in person. I could very well imagine that it will become a hybrid event where we also allow others to participate online, because we have simply seen that there is an enormous advantage also with respect to outreach, reaching regions who would never be able to afford to join such a meeting, but who are suddenly participating. So who wants can put in a bid and organize in 2 years' time the next conference. But there will be a very intense process if this works out to organize session proposals. That will be the next step. We will ask for whoever gets the job. We will see that there is a draft program being created, a program committee. And we are very inclusive. People who want to nominate themselves for these type of activities are typically not refused. So I would encourage people who want to get really active in organizing the World Conference series, if there's a possibility to be part of it. And then stay tuned. Subscribe, for example, to our newsletter for the Center for Earth Sciences to Animal Testing here in Hopkins. We are keeping everybody up to date when there is program developments, when there's time for submitting abstracts. It's a big thing to organize a conference, which typically attracts 1,000 people. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Thomas. I think we had a very interesting overview of the latest breakthrough technology in the field of alternative to animal testing, and we learned a lot about what's going to happen at the end of August online instead of Maastricht. But a lot of things cannot happen in real, but other opportunities open online.
Yeah, there's an alternative to many things, but not to meeting in person, to friendship and exchange. But it will be still a fantastic experience, I promise.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Thank you. And I look forward to the Congress in August.
So do I. Thanks for having me.
This podcast was produced by Alta Talks Academy. Registration to the 11th Congress is now open on our website, www.wc11maastricht.org.